I think we'll see a lot more discussion and engagement that people may view optimistically if you're in the crypto industry. If you're against crypto in general, you're going to have some difficult discussions ahead.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join me, Ryan Stubbe, Director of Bitcoin Mining, alongside our team of experts, Jason Ward, the head of FCAT Blockchain and Crypto, Parth Gargava, head of digital asset startups in Fidelity Labs, and Jack Newrider, associate at F Prime Capital. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, welcome to the week of Thanksgiving.
I know, holiday week in the US. Public service announcement, no podcast next week. They're giving us the week off. So we'll see you back the following week. But great to be here. And Matt, Alan, thanks for joining. I think is this your first time on the podcast?
It is my first time on the podcast.
Welcome. You've been working in the background a long time, on the mining team within FCAT. So really happy to have you here. So let's jump in. It was quite the week, huh? Last week, we had quite a few relatively big stories develop. So a couple that we wanted to focus on is, of course, options began trading around the Bitcoin ETP products, right? So we saw a lot of interesting kind of market dynamics unfolding over the course of the week around that. So we'll just talk a little bit about that and what that might mean for Bitcoin moving forward. And then, of course, the story that everyone's talking about is Chairman Gensler's decision to step down as of January 20th. So we'll talk a bit about that and maybe what that means for the regulatory landscape. And then there's one or two smaller stories that if we have time at the end, we'll cover before we wrap. So with that, Matt, you want to maybe just kind of tee up, what we saw as options began trading around the ETP products, maybe a little bit about the flows and open interest and things like that?
Yeah, certainly. So I think overall net, just a very bullish week for Bitcoin ETPs last week. There was something around $3.3 billion in net inflows to all crypto exchange-traded products last week, with Bitcoin ETPs largely leading that charge. I think we saw positive flows, positive price action. We nearly touched 100K there at the end of the week. And also in the middle of the week, we saw options begin to trade in some of the Bitcoin ETP products. And those options were certainly helping to buoy the price of Bitcoin. Just for everyone's context, a call option gives the owner the right to buy the underlying, so the Bitcoin ETP. A put option gives the owner the right to sell the product, and so a call is a bullish bet. And the call put skew was 4.4 to 1. So 4.4 wow. times as many call buyers as put buyers. So certainly some bullish sentiment there.
And Matt, that's on the heels of a really strong week the prior week for inflows as well. So I was looking at a story that said, basically, between the last 2 weeks, we've seen about $6 billion worth of inflows into crypto products, with BTC or Bitcoin exchange traded products leading that charge. So pretty strong.
Yeah, very strong. And I also think the development of options like opens up an interesting conversation about what the future of this market looks like. I think that the long-term view is that options trading adds liquidity to the market. But with such a bullish call put skew, like, I think right now what we're seeing is more volatility as opposed to less. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Ryan or Jason.
Well, one thing I'd say, and Ryan, jump in too, is that we're talking about options on Bitcoin as if it's new, but it's really just new to U.S. investors. It's been available offshore, so that market has been pretty active over time. And this may be a reason why we're seeing a little bit more volatility now. It's because people that are in the U.S. or registered entities in the U.S. are trying to adjust their portfolios to reflect the fact that they can now execute different strategies. So You're using options as a hedging strategy, some using it to affect a carry trade. But I think you've got a lot of expanded utility that's now available. And Matt, you were talking about options on the ETP products themselves. But in preparing for this discussion, I realized that NYSE, CBOE, NASDAQ, they've all taken steps that allow them to offer different options products to be traded through their venue. So just a Bitcoin index product offered by CBOE was announced will begin trading an option on spot Bitcoin index as soon as December 2nd. So it's just another indication that there's new tools available for a sophisticated investor to be able to utilize.
Well, it improves, it really improves, you know, the accessibility, you know, or the investability of the asset, right? By providing all of these different avenues, whether you're going to hold it spot or you're going to hold it in an ETP product or now through some sort of derivative. I think like that's that, you know, to your earlier point, Matt, I think historically the assumption has been that over time, that level of maturation around kind of market access, right, to this asset class would lead to, you know, the stabilization of price of what has historically been a really volatile asset class or a really volatile asset as we look at Bitcoin. Now, that's not happening currently, generally speaking. But I think if you take a step back and you look at the backdrop associated with what's going on in the market in general, there's just a tremendous amount of positive sentiment, a lot of optimism, right? And so that is, you know, the interest in these products is skewing the way that the rest of the market is skewing right now.
So can I share with you guys a really interesting soundbite that I picked up on? So we always talk about Bitcoin being relative to digital gold, right? So that reference is out there. There is unknown supply, you know, you don't have different characteristics that you might from a discounted cash flow type of model you can apply. But James Butterfill, who is head of research over at CoinShares, noted that year-to-date inflows for these BTC products, these ETP products, is about $37 billion. And to put that in context, the first year that you had U.S. gold ETFs, they attracted $309 million. So $309 million for gold, $37 billion for Bitcoin. People often refer to quote models. They say Bitcoin must 10x in order to get to the market cap of gold. But you know whether that calculus is accurate today or not, you know, you can do the math. But the point here is that there seems to be significant interest, and I don't know, I think this was probably 20 years ago, so put in you know time value of money calculus there, but either way you look at it, it's a very impressive attraction of value in the first year of products being available.
Yeah
Just to add to that, Jason, you know, speaking to some market participants over the past 2 weeks, you know, really at the beginning of the Trump trade, right, where we saw Bitcoin and crypto rally and gold actually down, market participants are theorizing that there was a rotation out of gold and into Bitcoin. Which is, I think, one of the first times we've ever heard of that emerging.
It is definitely an interesting story to follow. So, you know, Michael Saylor was on CNBC last week and responding to questions relative to a hedge fund taking a short position in MicroStrategy. And I won't go into the details of all of his calculus, but one of the things he talked about was that as a an issuer of assets, they had gone to the convertible debt market five times this year. And that their strategy was to utilize the funds raised there to acquire Bitcoin in their treasury. So they are definitely continuing to be vocal about their support for the asset and their belief that this is something that that can be held. And in their case, they believe should be held as a balance sheet asset for the company.
Yeah, it should be really interesting. So as far as investment products go, derivatives go, I mean, is there anything else on the horizon? I know, Jason, you kind of alluded to some of the index options. But, you know, it feels like we've got a pretty robust suite of products available around Bitcoin now, right? So obviously the kind of path that most issuers or providers have followed is, you know, expanding, you know, the assets that they're covering. So potentially ETH in the future, right? But I mean, is there anything else that is on the horizon that you guys know of?
I haven't seen any reporting around that myself yet. But what I think about is, you know, we're kind of in a lame duck period, so to speak, where we know that the current commissioner, Gary Gensler, has announced that he will resign on Inauguration Day. folks may not be aware, but another one of the Democratic commissioners, Jaime Legazara, has announced that he will be stepping down for personal reasons and dealing with family members' health. So we certainly wish him well on that. But that's going to leave two open positions. And one might assume that you'll still maintain a 3-2, allocation of commissioners. You know, President-elect Trump comes in, there's an appointee to the SEC chair. You assume that perhaps the other position is filled by a Democratic nominee. But that changing of the leadership of the agency could lead to more, more constructive engagement. So, and again, that's on the security side, and derivatives are managed by the CFTC. But I think we'll see a lot of, for lack of a better term, we'll see a lot more discussion and engagement that people may view optimistically if you're in the crypto industry. You know, if you're against crypto in general, you're going to have some difficult discussions ahead, probably.
So let's go there. And I think it's a good transition, right? So the second, or maybe the biggest story, I don't know, you know, options was certainly a big story last week, was that, you know, Chairman Gensler announced that he'll be stepping down as of inauguration day, as you said, Jason, right? And I think there's a couple of things that we could probably should unpack here, right? I think, you know, the quote unquote Trump trade, right, was really driven around kind of optimism and, you know, a generally held belief amongst certain camps that, you know, if you know, former President Trump was to be reelected, that that would lead to a sea change in terms of, you know, how regulators are approaching the industry, right? And I think that this perhaps was one of the more material, you know, events or you know, up, you know, things to happen since, right, he was elected, right? And maybe... some of that coming to fruition, right? Because I think obviously, Chairman Gensler and the crypto industry have a really colorful history over his tenure at the SEC. Jason, I'm sure you could maybe opine a little bit about some of what we've seen over that period. But to me, it feels like, you know, it's really not necessarily about the individual who is chairing the agency, but more about a change in the approach and the general kind of view and feeling around, you know, digital assets, you know, more or crypto assets more broadly, right? So I think that's what has people so excited, is the possibility for, you know, more clarity around, you know, certain, you know, regulatory aspects, and just a much more friendly approach. Now, as we kind of have covered in the past, we'll see, right? But this, again, is probably the first kind of step in that direction, you know, with the chairman stepping down.
I agree with you in referencing a change in approach, and it's not necessarily the leadership, but then again, leadership sort of drives the approach taken by the agency. So I don't want to be overly nuanced, but you know, there are many people within the industry who have been somewhat frustrated with the approach the current leadership has taken, and you know, this push for acceptance that existing securities laws were more than adequate to cover these new types of vehicles, the debate over whether or not something is a digital asset security or digital asset commodity has been something that has essentially been at the center of the entire term that Mr. Gensler has served in his current position. You've seen disagreements even within the agencies themselves. You know, you've got Commissioner Peirce who have a different point of view, and that's good dialogue they have. But even Chair of the CFTC has stated positions that are counter to what Mr. Gensler has advocated for. So, you know, you take a step back and you ask yourself, what's really gone on the last several years? The agency has been working to affect the policies that it believes would protect investors. So we may see that there are different policies with the same intent coming from the next leadership of the SEC. But one thing that I hope many people will be happy to not hear consistently is the refrain, come on in and register with us. You know, because what we've seen is memes about this refrain and people expressing frustrations that even in spite of attempts to engage the regulator to understand what the right model would be to be compliant, several of those entities that chose to go in and engage found themselves as defendants in lawsuits filed against them by the SEC. So again, the mission to protect investors is the same. I think how they go about it may differ, but hopefully this next period of time will lead to what many have been requesting, which is regulatory clarity and perhaps new policy, new rules that will help us evolve the market as the technology has helped evolve these vehicles.
Well, I think you're spot on with that, right? Because I think the part of the kind of the platform that the current leadership of the agency has kind of, you know, run on is that the existing rules can be applied to this asset class, right? And I think there's general belief, general point of view across the industry that that is actually not the case, right? And so I think that, you know, that and maybe just general embrace, right, of the industry are the two biggest areas where we're likely to see the most change in terms of approach and, you know, just point of view overall.
I think that's right. And, you know, ironically, you have times when the agency is suggesting that the rules are adequate, there's no change required to the rule. But then they went ahead and pushed for a rule change that would broaden the definition of dealer. And that is relevant because I believe it was just the other day, a Texas judge ruled in favor of plaintiffs who brought suit against the SEC. So in this case, you had, who was it? It was the Blockchain Association and the Crypto Freedom Alliance of Texas that have brought suit against the SEC, saying that the attempt to broaden the definition of a dealer was regulatory overreach. In this case, Judge Reed O'Connor, who, by the way, also presided over a case, Consensus versus the SEC, ruled in favor of the plaintiffs and ordered that the entire rule drafted by the SEC be thrown out. So the SEC is continuing to evaluate, you know, next steps or, you know, whether any further action will be taken relative to that suit. But that was an example where the regulator essentially tried to expand the definition to encompass any entity that had the effect of providing market liquidity. And some argued that this was really about, you know, treasury bills, but it's really about any particular security that might be under the jurisdiction of the regulator. So by taking that approach to try and expand the definition, again, all the rules are adequate. Don't worry about it. We've got you covered to, oh, this rule we want to change because this rule would allow us to capture traders under the umbrella of dealer is, you know, it's sort of counterintuitive based on the argument that all the rules are already applicable.
Yeah.
And again, I'm using a super broad brush to paint this. It's much more nuanced than I'm discussing. But point is that there's been a lot of this SEC, in summary, has been a very litigious SEC. And over the course of the past year, some of those cases have been ruled against them. So, you know, put it this way, going forward, I expect that we will still continue to see things navigated through the court systems, but the track record here has actually started to move in a direction where industry participants have been able to make some progress and secure some wins in the courts that have helped to try and further the dialogue around how to regulate this environment in this industry.
Yeah. And I would expect that the, you know, the next kind of thing that people will be looking for is who's going to be nominated, right? This will be the next big nomination. I think, you know, the majority of the other postings have been filled, right? So that will be certainly something we'll be watching over what I would expect is finalized in the coming weeks. All right, let's move on. I know there's a couple of smaller stories that maybe we wanted to cover. You know, one being Coinbase's decision to delist WBTC. Of course, for those of you who don't know, that's wrapped Bitcoin, right? And I think this was notable for a number of reasons. Obviously, WBTC has had, you know, a challenging couple of months ever since over the summer. Its primary custodian, you know, that's the custodian custodying the Bitcoin that actually sits behind these wrapped tokens, announced a new strategic partnership with a Hong Kong based entity called BitGlobal. And of course, you know, in true kind of crypto industry fashion, they very quickly, you know, figured out that entity is associated with Justin Sun, who is a, you know, I think it's fair to say a relatively controversial player in the space. And so Coinbase said that they were, you know, evaluating whether WBTC still met its listing standards and determined that there was some concern around that and that they're going to be delisting the token, you know, as of December 19th, I believe it is. You know, I think, you know, it's also worth noting in parallel that, you know, Coinbase has their own wrapped Bitcoin products now, and, you know, other exchanges such as Kraken have followed suit, right? So I think a couple of takeaways, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts, but, you know, I'm always very interested in kind of tokens or platforms that boost the utility of Bitcoin. I think wrapped products in general, whether it's wrapped BTC or other types of wrapped tokens, are going to become more and more common, right? Particularly as we see some of these DeFi use cases, you know, take hold. And that's where we've seen kind of the majority of the $13.5 billion in wrapped Bitcoin that's in circulation today live, right? But I also think, you know, you're probably going to see increased competition amongst these products as more and more exchanges kind of move into this space. I think there's also probably a lesson to be learned here, right? Like, their centralization of the custody scheme behind wrapped Bitcoin was always a concern for WBTC. And then, of course, there's the, you know, there was the announcement that they were going to be decentralizing that into two custodians. But how you decentralize and who you're decentralizing control to matters, right? And clearly, the affiliation or the perceived affiliation with Justin Sun and an entity that he has some relationship with and level of control over, caused a lot of concern. Right. So I think, a lot of people have pointed to the fact that there's a use case for, you know, completely decentralizing custody, right? Through like multi-sigs and other things. I think that's a really interesting path. But yeah, any thoughts on this?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing that I would add is that like decentralization of the custody can occur either in the same product or in multiple products. So I think what we're seeing now is, you know, WBTC tried to decentralize their custody by adding a second custodian. The market generally didn't like who that custodian was. Now other custodians have stepped up, right? Like whether WBTC has five custodians or there are five offerings of essentially the same product, all with different custodians, the effect is relatively similar. And I think like seeing a US-based and listed firm offer a product such as this like definitely raises the level of trust in the product and in the space as a whole.
Well, and you know, considering, again, when you look at utilization and the majority being in DeFi, right, like I think, you know, many have pointed out that these products are fairly centralized, you know, whether it's historically right. been WBTC or it's CBBTC, which is Coinbase's product, right? So it kind of is interesting in that it runs against the ethos of DeFi, right? But at the same time, a lot of the market doesn't really seem to care that it's more centralized as long as it's safe, right? Now that's not the entire market. You still will have people who will always prioritize decentralization in terms of how these tokens are managed, right? But so far, you know, it seemingly hasn't been a huge barrier for these products.
So just to play a little bit of the devil's advocate for a moment, just to make things a little more fun, when you think about this whole concept of wrapped Bitcoin, are you in effect creating leverage? Is a question that people sometimes ask. And the answer there is, if you can cryptographically prove that it is one for one and is locked up, then you're not really leveraging the position up. You're changing the format or the location where you can use it. So sort of think about it almost like depository receipts. You know, you might not be able to access an equity in a given market, but they may offer you exposure through a depository receipt. So I sort of see it that way. But I also think, you know, might Coinbase have had a longer term roadmap that would have caused them to emphasize their existing product just because it was more advantageous to them? So it might have been that this was something they could have done before, but they accelerated. But again, I sort of think about the wrapped Bitcoin and other wrapped assets as a way that people are trying to address the need for interoperability. So to me, is it really about the fact that you're decentralizing, or should you be thinking about how do we address interoperability as a topic?
It's about bringing the conversation full circle. It's about improving access to, right? The use case is different, right? But, or maybe not in some cases, right? I think, you know, it's usually through some sort of investment-esque lens, but I think being able to access the asset on more network, on more blockchains is the goal, right? But I think you raise a good point. I mean, and you've heard me talk about this before. I'm very bullish on things that kind of improve utility and accessibility in general, but there's risk that comes with that. And it does feel a little bit like rehypothecation, especially when you're wrapping and wrapping and wrapping again, right? And that's kind of what we've seen is these different, different layers in the stack. It's becoming more and more complicated to really track like true origin, which is of course what we've always kind of touted as like, you know, one of the killer features, right? Of blockchain technology in general is always being able to kind of look at the single source of truth on the chain. But that is admittedly getting harder to do as you add more layers and more complication to the system.
Well, what I think you're doing is you're making the case for the layer twos on top of Bitcoin. You know, and some people might ask the question, is Lightning actually in competition with wrapped Bitcoin? And the answer there is, I think no. They're different utilizations. Like a Lightning network, using it as a payment channel or locking Bitcoin in and doing any number of transactions before you take the net sum and unlock that and bring it back to the main chain is very different than trying to have exposure to an asset on a second chain. And then, as you're pointing out, Ryan, the potential for the rehypothecation, it's not about necessarily trying to reduce transaction fees. You're, in that case, looking at how might you utilize that asset in to affect some outcome, whether it's leverage trading or if it's lending. But the bottom line still exists that when you take those steps and you enter into those types of transactions, you run the risk of not having control of the asset itself.
Right. And in the Lightning case, you are holding native units, right? And I think it's worth noting that there is a history here, right, where WBTC isn't always at parity. It breaks the buck, right, with actual Bitcoin. We've seen it. And depending on what venue you're looking at, it can be significant at times, a premium or discount, right? So I think that's the other thing that you probably should highlight.
Well, I was just going to add is to build on Jason's point about other Bitcoin layer twos, like, while Lightning might not be in direct competition with a wrapped Bitcoin product, I think we are seeing development activity of other layer twos that would be considered in competition with a wrapped Bitcoin product. And maybe this whole narrative is all just users of Bitcoin want to have more utility for the Bitcoin that they hold. And today, wrapped Bitcoin might be the best product, but in the future, that might not be the case.
Right.
So it could just all be a longer roadmap.
For sure. For sure. All right, guys. Well, this was a great discussion. We're at time. Thanks, Matt, for joining. Really appreciated having you on and hope to have you back soon. And Jason, it was great as always. And thanks everyone who joined live to listen. Again, I mentioned it at the top, but we won't be publishing a podcast next week. Look forward to seeing all of you the following week. If you're in the US, have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you soon.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets, nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.